Welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I am your co-host, JP John Paz. With me, as always, is the star of the show, a former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, former NWA Florida Heavyweight Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers in professional wrestling history. He is the devil himself, the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, what are you up to, sir?
I think we better close it on that glowing review. It's not going to get any better than that, my man.
Now, you mentioned it might all go downhill. Well, it all might truly go downhill because this episode of Taskmaster Talks, which is technically episode number 2, is the finger poke of doom in WCW. When I just say that, do you think of good times or bad times when I refer to the finger poke of doom?
I cringe, but nobody knows the true story but three people.
And we're going to find that out today, I hope, for the true story of the finger poke of doom.
Yes, you are.
Now, leading into the finger poke of doom, there was big controversy, and I'm sure we'll get into it on a later episode, but the big controversy was Kevin Nash beating Goldberg at Starrcade for the world title, ending Goldberg's big undefeated streak. Whose decision was that to end the undefeated streak of one Bill Goldberg?
Eventually, it was Eric's. I can tell you a story.
Okay.
The Atlanta Falcons were there. Everybody from CNN was there. And they told me the finish. And I said to Eric, let's take a walk. And we went outside. And this isn't blaming Eric at all, because I think there was other powers behind that had creative control that told them this. And that's why I'm saying the only three people knew, four was Eric. I went out and I said, we got 43,000 people here. They've been chanting Goldberg for an hour and a half, and the show's going to start in a half hour. Why are we beating him? Well, you can't keep a guy undefeated. I said, yeah, Ali was undefeated, and then when they did it right with Frazier, they had three fights. I said, if he's going to lose, here's what I suggest. He's got Kevin rocking and rolling. He goes for a tackle, his finish, right? His setup first finish. Kevin's in the corner. He goes for tackle. Kevin sidestep. He hits the turnbuckle. He goes through and hits the post. It isn't that I'm so smart. I've seen it before. Ray Stevens and Bruno. He pops out. He's selling. Kevin gives him a big boot. The ropes, drops a big elbow. We pin him the way he won. He's been winning clean. We're going to beat him clean. They came up with handcuffs, cattle prod, every other thing under the sun, including probably the kitchen sink. The Falcons hit the ring. They beat the Falcons off, and they beat Goldberg. My way might not have been the better way, but I think it would have been easy. Hey, we can all lose. If Ali lost, we can all lose. Disappointed that, but then the next night, the finger poke of doom. So here's this real story. Do you remember what Kevin Nash looked like then?
Yes.
Do you remember what Hulk Hogan looked like then?
Yes.
Do you think Hogan wanted to wrestle Kevin Nash?
That's a great question. Did he want to wrestle Kevin Nash?
No. Because he'd have to sell like a son of a bitch.
Yep. It hit the big size difference and everything else. And
the size difference, and you got to realize
Hulk was bulk it down.
Yeah, Hulk was no longer the Hulk from 85. And that's not saying anything. He had injuries. Age catches up to us all. Kevin Nash has kept his mouth shut for, 25 years? He was a good soldier and took the bullet for the general.
Mm.
And he's gotten blamed for it for 25 years. I'm going to rectify that right now. Kevin Nash did what he was asked to do, and Kevin was getting paid very, very, very well back in that days. You know, it was over $2 million a year, and you're asked to do this by your idol. If you ask, and maybe you've heard Nash say that he went to one WrestleMania.
Kevin Nash's idol is actually Hulk Hogan, he was saying back then?
He went to see the match with Andre and Hogan. Your idol asks you to do something. You're making all that money. You got power that you can overcome that. And Kevin has been silent about it for 25 years. It's time to lift the veil and not blame Kevin Nash.
So really kind of going into it, as we're definitely going to dig a little bit deeper and go into that, but that, I love that kind of lead in there. So the infamous nickname of it is the Finger Poke of Doom, obviously referring to the infamous night, January 4th, 1999, at the Georgia Dome in Atlanta, Georgia, during a live Nitro, huge crowd for WCW, huge crowd for Nitro, just a huge crowd in general. I mean, just unbelievable for a Monday night show to have that up.
That you could see
attendance. It was live, just huge.
That you could see live on TV.
Right.
And, I mean, it was, I'm pretty sure it was close to $1 million gate. They drew, I mean, and what I couldn't understand was you got $1 million, 43,000 people are close to $1 million. And if you tell me that he's won too much, why are those people coming? And if I got to say this, you know the Titanic?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They saw the iceberg. It was too late. I saw the iceberg that night.
Obviously, you're the booker, but do you have any say, or does that quote-unquote creative control trump you?
Trumps me big time. Big time. Because a lot of people don't know this. I didn't have a contract with WCW. You were that. Are you aware of that, that he didn't have a contract with WCW? He had a contract with Turner.
Wow. No, I didn't realize that. Okay. Interesting.
That's what you call creative control. When Ted Turner gives you the keys to the kingdom.
That is crazy, as far as the contract and stuff. So basically anything that he wants, that doesn't work for me, brother, or whatever everyone always says. Is that's exactly how it goes down?
Yep. Exactly. I'll tell you a story. I was brought in to a meeting with Bill Bush, Gary Justin, J.J. Dillon, myself, and Hogan. And Bill Bush, who was a very, very, very nice man, super guy. He was an accountant. And they made him president after Eric. He didn't have the savvy eyes on one-on-one and try to get it around. He called Hogan and said, well, the Hulk Hogan era is not over, but we're going with Goldberg. I looked at JJ and I said, wow, this is the end of all of us. And not long after that, it was the end of us. You don't tell a guy, and it sounds like I'm knocking Hulk, but it's not. I used to say to my kids, when you say your prayers tonight, make sure you say thank God for Hulk Hogan, because this is how you're living. Hulk Hogan was the biggest star ever in the history of pro wrestling. He took it out of little arenas with Vince McMahon. Everybody forgets they were running every night of the week, three towns minimum, and sometimes four towns. They had a Hogan town, They had a warrior town, a Jim Duggan town, and then they had a town where they're bringing guys in and trying to find them, trying to change their persona. They're running four towns and selling out four towns. And Hogan did that with his charisma. And he maybe didn't do this maliciously because he thought, hey, I'm Hulk Hogan, and he was, and it still is. But it wasn't done. I mean, think about the match they could have had. It might have not been the most technical match of all times. But if you had had a match and there was a non-finish and guys got in the ring and everybody was throwing each other around and excitement and you went off the air, you could come back with three pay-per-views. If I got to say it again, is when I saw it, it was the Titanic hitting the iceberg. And not only hitting the iceberg, we were dragging against the iceberg and taking in water really fast. And I don't think it was done maliciously, but sometimes when you're only booking yourself, you don't see the big picture. Like Eric once said to me, and again, this is not a knock on Eric. He said, guys come to me with great ideas. I said, that's true, and I understand that. And some of them are great. But does anybody ever come to you with an idea for somebody else? I look at wrestling like it's a circus. If you don't like the acrobats, don't worry, because the clowns are going to come out of the clown car. If you don't like that, you're going to see you would have seen the elephants. And at the end of the circus, Gunther Gabriel Williams was going to stick his head in a lion's mouth. Everybody has a place on the card. So you need for people to understand what their place is in the card. And we all have a symbiotic relationship with every match that precedes us. So my idea was I always put my best technical wrestling match on first. And I mean, I got heat for not using the younger guys in a top position. Well, those same younger guys are still around today and they're in top positions. And fortunately, most of them are giving a rub to the younger guys, which my generation never really did. It is just dollars and cents. I got called over a couple of times to the CNN North Tower. We're in the South Tower. The North Tower knew nothing about wrestling, but they knew economics. And they would say to me, why did a guy making $450,000 or $650,000 lose to a guy that's making $124,000? Well, I can't explain it to them because all they see is dollars and cents. And that was the really thing that hurt WCW and stifled Eric. Because if I had gone over twice, Eric must have been going over there every TV, after every TV. And the other thing is, once AOL bought WCW, it didn't matter. They didn't want wrestling. So that's the story. I mean, Kevin Nash was a good soldier, and he did what was asked, and he did it to the best of his ability. And he's kept quiet all these years. Pretty admirable thing. He sucked it up and took the heat and went with it.
And really kind of leading into it, it's just interesting the way things were going down, because Nash, obviously, the world champion, WC world champion, but he's the leader of NWO Wolfpack, and they splintered it off. And then he had NWO Hollywood, which was another one. So you had NWO Hollywood led by Hulk Hogan, NWO Wolfpack led by Nash. Nash beats Goldberg very controversially. A lot of people may be not happy with that or upset with that, but he wins, and it kind of leads to the big match. Hogan, who brings down Scott Steiner, and Nash, who brings down Hall, and who was just kind of coming back, Hall and Nash just coming back together. But leading into it, I think a lot of people had interest of it because Nash was a babyface and Hogan right. was kind of still the heel. So I think people kind of maybe thinking, all right, and Nash was kind of a pretty big draw, obviously, NWO big draw. But leading into that, was that kind of a thought of like, okay, maybe we'll have a legit match, or was that never even questioned?
I don't think it was ever questioned, and you brought up a very good point. The NWO never should have splinted. I mean, they were throwing T-shirts at anybody thinking they could get over. There were guys in there, and I'm not going to knock anybody. There were guys in there that shouldn't have been in the NWO. The NWO shouldn't have gotten any bigger than Hogan, Nash, Hall, Kidd, and maybe Steiner. That would be it. And once you start enlarging things, it takes away. I, looking at a compact unit of superstars, now you're getting a watered-down version, and then you split it again, and it waters it down again. I said earlier we hit the iceberg. Now the ship is going down. I think it was a, and then we had the Latino World Order. I mean, and they've tried to recreate the invasion angle on numerous times in numerous places, and it's never worked. Because the thing was, when Hall and Nash came, we didn't say who they were. We were saying, why are you here? Tony Schiavone did a magnificent job being surprised. Bobby Heenan did a great job being surprised. And they were so overpowering that the wrestlers themselves would come to me and say, they had been sent by Vince to kill the territory. And my stock answer was, take a look at the houses. If he's killing the territory, let him send more.
True.
Because what I did, it wasn't being smart or intelligent. I think it was that I saw something that maybe some people didn't see because they were so into the forest they couldn't see the trees. All I did was take all the heat that Vince had put on his two stars. And you remember when Vince tried to say, Nash and Hall be on TV next week. He had the phony Nash and Hall. And, I mean, these guys were over so big. We had numerous lawsuits, and I went to a couple depositions. And then when we turned Hulk at the beach, it all kind of made sense because where did Hulk come from? He started Hulkamania in New York. So there are the three New York stars that Vince had built up for years. And they decimated WCW. I can remember the damnedest thing I ever saw. I believe it was at Dayton, Ohio. I'm watching the matches, and there's in the stands, there's two flags, one WCW flag, another NWO flag. They actually got into a fight and caused the police to go up there and stop them from killing each other. So that angle got over like no angle has ever gotten over. And again, I'm sure time will prove me wrong, but it's going to be a long time before something gets over like that again in professional wrestling. Because at that time, people believed that these guys were really invading.
Yeah. I mean, even as a fan at that point, we kind of didn't know what the hell was going on. Like, what the hell? Like, so shocking. One of those things that cannot be duplicated in wrestling. And obviously, instead, they tried to duplicate it, but never could pull it off.
Everything fell into place. We didn't call them by their names. We didn't even use their names, National Hall. I believe it was 6-8 weeks before we said Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. And that's when the deposition started, the lawsuit started.
Was it always the plan just to kind of pretend they were WWF guys? Was that always kind of the idea? Because Eric always says, no, not really, but that had to have been, right, the original plan?
I mean, I don't know what other plan it would be. And this was Eric's idea, the invasion angle. He had seen it in Japan. Japan used it with, I believe, New Japan. And was it UFC or whatever the F?
UWF.
Yeah, UWF. And he came up with the idea, which was brilliant. I remember him talking to me and Arn Anderson, Ric Flair, about it. He actually took us out of his office and we went on the balcony. He told us about it. And he put it together. I give Eric all the credit in the world. But even as powerful as Eric was, he had to maybe compromise sometimes because Hogan had total creative control. And that's not saying it's bad, because I'm not going to say the guy's name. I remember when Hogan first got there, and one of the top guys went to Jim Barnett and said, I want to beat him for the title, or I want to beat him before he gets the title. And there was a couple of them that came to Barnett, and because Barnett was one of the smartest guys I've met in the wrestling business who doesn't get his due. There'd be no WWE without Jim Barnett. And Barnett came to me and said, you got to stop this nonsense. This guy is being paid an ungodly amount of money and they want to beat him on his way in. So in some ways, that's how I got to be the booker, because I had no dog in the race. I wasn't wrestling per se. And I saw that you couldn't bring Hogan in and beat him after he had lost to the Warrior and he had lost so much size. I always look at it like I'm a big boxing fan. My family has been in the boxing business 200 years. We saw Ali win his last 7 fights on decisions, and a lot of them questionable, especially the Jimmy Young fight. And we turned away and had a blind eye because it was Muhammad Ali. Well, he was the Muhammad Ali of professional wrestling. And he blew the WCW up along with, this is why I say it's symbiotic, along with Hall, Nash, and the guy that never gets the credit he deserves is Six-Pac, because out of those 3 guys I mentioned, you knew you couldn't beat them. One was Hulk Hogan, the other one was a giant, the other one looked like Tarzan, but people figured they could beat up Sean, and it just worked perfectly. And that's why I'm going back. I'm reiterating what I'm saying is, once they started putting too many pieces on the puzzle that was already perfect, that's what caused the problem.
And another thing with Waldman was he had the cool factor. He was a great worker. He was perfect for that unit. Like you said, maybe he could take the loss and not be hurt at all.
Yeah.
But when Bischoff fired him, he hurt his neck and then wanted to redo his contract, whatever, he got released, got fired. That immediately helped WWF and made the DX, which was, no offense at this point, Triple H is somewhat of a joke at this point. That totally made Triple H look great and made DX look great, that they just got a guy from the NWO part of their group.
Let me ask you this, and you see it, and not many people see this. He's going to be the only back-to-back Hall of Famer that's gone in with 2 groups.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an intricate part in NWO, And he certainly was, like you said, he made DX. So my hats have always been off to Sean because I think the world of him. And, you know, he's gone through the other side and he's healthy, he's clean, and he's a wonderful guy. And he doesn't get the credit he deserves as a performer. And I'll tell you what, I rode with him some, and he was one of the smartest guys ever been around. And I'll tell you what, not too long ago, I was in a show at PCW Ultra, and they asked me for finish, and Sean said, are you sure that's the way to go? And I said, I think so. And he said, well, and when the finish worked, he came back and said, I shouldn't have questioned you. You were absolutely right. Takes a big guy to say you're wrong. But that's how much he loves the business. Because none of us are right all the time. And if booking was so easy, we'd all turn to page 40 and figure out what we got to do tonight.
Right. Not so easy, for sure. And the most interesting thing about the 1499 Nitro, the Finger Poke of Doom episode, is that Nash is kind of pretending, obviously we find out, that he's mad at Hall for interfering in the Goldberg match, so he says Goldberg's going to get a rematch. And that was kind of what really sold that house. Everyone thought they were going to get that big rematch, Goldberg versus Nash. I mean, that was, obviously I was saying that Hogan ends up fighting Nash, which is what happens, but the right. fans really thought they were getting Goldberg versus Nash, the rematch, so they had a bait-and-switch scenario. You think that would definitely did not help WWE at that point because Goldberg was the big, you know, big kahuna?
Hulk forgot what he told me one time. He said, when he was the one that was instrumental to get me the book, said, you can make mistakes, but not too many, and you can't make big ones. Well, he forgot his own words.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about that because it's in the Georgia Dome. I mean, Goldberg's obviously, I mean, Hogan's a big guy, but they weren't building up that match. I mean, you're really building up Goldberg and Nash. Everyone wanted to see Goldberg get the title back pretty much, right? Am I right on that?
Yeah, absolutely right. And Nash at that time was such a physical specimen, he could match Goldberg that way. And, I mean, no disrespect to Hulk, but he had been around for quite a while at that time, on top. And rightfully so, he's drawn more money probably than anybody. But it was time for Nash to beat Hogan and to go with Goldberg, and you could have done anything. You could have done a finish where Nash had Goldberg pinned and Hogan run in and kick Nash and Goldberg got disqualified. Something completely off the wall. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
You could have done anything. But I don't know how to put this. Wrestlers, and I'm one, or was one, basically are insecure people. And they always have this idea in their head that somebody's out to get them. And as I said before, when Eric told me this guy got a great idea, you got to have a great idea from the first match on to have a 2-hour and then 3-hour show.
Right.
And again, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall were very, and Pac were very, very helpful to me when they were, like, Hall came up with the crow for Sting. And Nash, I was lucky enough when Kevin took the book to be his assistant. And when Kevin gave up the book, he gave it to me again. And Kevin has great ideas. And some of his statements, because Kevin's an old bullshit guy, rub people the wrong way, but he's right. You have to have bigger than life characters. And let's ask this question. Do you hear anybody talking about wrestling to you anymore on the street?
No, never. Hardly, actually. It's just sad the way it is. Used to be all the time when I was younger. Oh, my God. Couldn't go 2 feet without somebody talking about wrestling.
You know, last night I went out for dinner and met some friends, and one of their friends joined. And he was a huge wrestling fan. You know what he talked about? The Olympic Auditorium and Roddy Piper.
Nice.
He didn't even know who was the champion. It's like there's a time warp going on. And I understand why the social media critics jump on Goldberg beating The Fiend. But obviously their ratings went up. This goes back to what I said. The guys from my generation never gave these kids the rubs they deserved. Now, I hope, and I have a vested interest in Bill Goldberg because I made him. The first night, people don't realize this, the first night he was ever on Nitro, I beat him. He had, you know, the bald headed with the hair. He had a Falcons jacket, red tights, and red boots. And Mongo beat him on a countout. I saw the mistake I made, and I kept him off of TV for 3 months. Then I made him Mike Tyson with the short boots, the black tights, no jacket. So what I'm hoping is that this WrestleMania goes over. Because first of all, the Samoans are the best athletes I've ever seen, the Samoans and Tongans. And if you're going to make a guy, they tried with Roman for a long time. And when he did that interview to me about leukemia, it turned him babyface in my eyes. And the kid, they've invested a lot of money in him. And he's the future. Bill can help out later on, but you've got to go with the future.
Absolutely. And it's kind of very parallel because obviously if Reigns is fighting Goldberg at WrestleMania, he should beat him. And I think that, not that Nash was the old guard in 99 or anything, do think that if they were going to have the rematch at Nitro, I think that no shenanigans should have taken place and Goldberg should have beat him for the title. So, you know, he beat Hogan for the first run. He gets the loss, so nobody kind of is obsessed or booing that he's undefeated. He got that loss out of the way. Now he rematched right away against Nash and beats Nash. Is that a crazy idea?
No, because what I said to you before, Ali, there was the only time there's two undefeated world heavyweight champions, and Ali was the crowd favorite, and he lost to Frazier. It didn't hurt Ali's drawing at all. You got to lost. You can't go. You know, Rocky went undefeated, Marciano, and it put boxing into a funk for years until Ali came along. Well, it should have been what you said. He beats Nash. They have the rubber match, and you do anything you could have if you want to turn and this is just spitballing. If you want to turn Nash babyface, the NWO hits the ring, they're beating up Goldberg. Nash, one of them bumps into him, he spins him around, punches him, and Goldberg and him are back-to-back fighting the NWO. The NWO peels off, they look at each other, they shake hands, and then you could go off with tag matches that would draw big money. Hogan and Hall against Goldberg and Nash, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, that would have drawn big money. And then later on, you know, I don't like switching back and forth, but later on, Kevin could have said, as a babyface, hey, we never finished the last match and never finished business. I want that shot again. And put him in a cage so nobody could handcuff the NWO or bar them from the building or whatever. And you could have had a fourth match. You could have squeezed the fourth match out of that.
Absolutely, yeah. It would have been pretty good. But instead, like we said, they did this weird kind of angle, or you know, really, you were part of it as well, but it was aggravated stalking or whatever you want to call it with Miss Elizabeth, and she brought him to the police, and the police arrested Goldberg. They, I guess, originally might have said it was rape or something, but then they kind of changed it to aggravated stalking. Whatever the case may be, that was kind of what they were intimating. Was that just a huge kind of like mistake? Because it didn't really make sense. Like, Elizabeth was involved. She says he was stalking her. Then they arrest Goldberg. He's taken out of the building. Now it's a question of is he going to make it back in time? What were your kind of thoughts of that whole angle being thrown in there?
When you make a mistake like they did, you got to throw the mistake away and get back on track. They took another sidetrack, and then it's again, not only did the ship go down, now there's not enough lifeboats to save the people. I can remember JJ and I watching that match, and JJ said to me, that's where I got the Titanic. JJ said to me, we just hit the iceberg.
So crazy.
And then trying to rectify it, I would have, in my head, said, this is bullshit. Nash, and which you could have Hogan laugh at Nash. Oh, you fell for that bullshit. Because Nash was 90% babyface. You could have had him attack Hulk. You could have had a three-way with Hogan, Goldberg, and Nash. The scenarios were endless. But they started to panic, and that's the worst thing you can do when you book is panic. Unfortunately, you know, like you said, Elizabeth wasn't anywhere near the situation at the time, and they just threw her in there because she was a star, and they thought her star power would rectify it. And, you know, at that time, too, the stalking was a big thing. Sometimes you need to go the opposite way.
Yeah, that was probably not the best as far as just a creative decision on that, because you throw her in. Then Hogan is basically, you know, supposedly kind of a feuding with Nash all along here, really. And he comes back and he kind of said a month prior that he may retire or that he may run for president, which was kind of just all the hoax and stuff. What was the whole point of kind of him stepping away, saying he was going to retire, saying he may run for president? Was that just all for kind of just to garner some attention, or was any sort of truth to him ever thinking retirement or presidency?
Well, Hulk saw what Jesse Ventura did. And he saw all – you remember Jesse was going to run for president?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep.
He saw all the media attention that Jesse was getting. And Jesse and Hulk had been friends and enemies. And he said, well, maybe I could take the same road that he's going. Because I was going to say who in their right mind is going to vote for Hulk Hogan for president. But we're a strange country, so.
Well, and the thing was that I guess Jesse and him have, like you kind of said, like this professional kind of rivalry, too. Like, hey, I'm not letting you get attention. I'm getting the attention.
Right. And Jesse's a very smart guy to do what he did, because nobody realizes that he beat Hubert Humphrey's son in Minnesota. And then I think he was the mayor. There was three people running, the mayor of St. Paul of Minneapolis. And Jesse was not even, it was an afterthought running for governor until Jesse knew how to project himself. And I think Hogan, like you said, if Jesse can do it, I'm going to try it.
And he definitely did garner some attention. I mean, a lot of people were kind of talking about that, whether it be mainstream media or whoever. They were really kind of talking about that. So that night, Goldberg gets arrested or whatever. He's going to jail. He may not make it back in time. So Nash offers a title shot to Hogan, who accepts. So the fans in attendance may be thinking, okay, bait and switch. We're not getting Goldberg-Nash rematch, but we are getting Hogan-Nash, which is – could be a huge match. It could be something important. Obviously, Hogan, anytime he made events, it's huge and it's important. Do you think that was just like you said, just another mistake doing another mistake? You don't need to obviously do the Miss Elizabeth thing. Do you need to do the Hogan, throw him in there to do the bait and switch? I mean, what's like kind of thought process? Is this all Eric or is this you putting this pen to paper?
No, it was. I'm going to tell you what I think. I think this was Hulk because, again, he had, you know, a contract with Turner. He had creative control. And, you know, Eric was probably stymied there and was hoping for the best. I mean, a lot of people don't give Eric the credit he deserves. He did a magnificent job bringing all those guys in. We had WWE on the ropes. If we had not gotten off track and then really later really got off track, who knows?
It was not good. And leading up to that match, like obviously, so Goldberg's in jail, Hogan accepts, you know, all this stuff is going on. Obviously, Nitro is in full swing. So the main event, Hogan with Scott Steiner against Nash, who comes out with Scott Hall, was a bit of a surprise, if you think about it, because Scott Hall technically was in NWO Hollywood. So now he helped Nash at Starrcade beat Goldberg, and now he's wearing a Wolfpack shirt. So that was like a nice little surprise. It's like, wow, the Outsiders are back together.
Right.
Which was great because everyone loves Hall with Nash, and when they're separated, they're not as great. Them together, possibly one of the greatest duos of all time, right? I mean, just the chemistry with those two alone is amazing.
It's like Abbott without Costello, you know what I mean? Burns without Gracie, Jackie Gleason without Ed Norton. Yeah, they're great, but they're greater as a team because they were so good together and they were so in tune to what was happening today with the youth. They were hip before hip was hip. And one of the greatest things, and I knew it got a lot of heat with people, was when Hall, Nash, and Kidd did the parody of the Four Horsemen. I mean, Tony Schiavone almost puked up laughing so hard. I mean, it was so cool. And it got a lot of heat with the Horsemen, but it got over because here are the Horsemen. They're heels in some places and baby faces in most. And they're being satirized with three of the hippest guys in the wrestling business at the time. It was brilliant. I mean, the tears that Pac did, Nash coming out as Arn. I mean, it was an amazing, amazing bit of TV. And if our listeners want to see some great TV, go back to that episode. And that's how over they were. They could flip the audience wherever they went. And people always say, well, they didn't do jobs. Well, I saw the three of them lay down for the Horsemen in Charlotte, and all three of them give up. So they didn't have problems doing jobs. I mean, Kevin Nash put Rey Mysterio over. So they didn't have problems doing jobs, but they didn't want to do jobs for the sake of just doing jobs, which was smart on them. And at that time, they were rocking and rolling, so they had a pretty good say of what was going to happen. And I don't begrudge them for that because it turned out very well until what we're talking about now.
So the match starts, and you kind of just curious of what's going to happen. The fans really, and even at Starrcade, when Nash beat Goldberg, they were cheering for Nash. I mean, he was really, really over as a babyface,
right.
And he basically was a baby. You said 90% babyface. He really was over at this point. A lot of people were saying, like, wow, if anybody's going to beat Goldberg, and I remember this exactly, and people deny it now, but if anybody back then, you're a true fan, if anybody's going to beat Goldberg, it was Nash. He was more over than Goldberg. Or, in fact, I don't know if he was more over, but almost just as over. The fans, like, pop when he beat Goldberg. So he was kind of a big babyface at this point. Hogan was the big heel. So they kind of circle each other. Nash is intimidating Hogan. Hogan's kind of, you know, brushing back. And you think Hogan's going to throw the punch. And then, boom, Hogan pretends to throw the big punch, pokes him right in the chest, finger poke of doom. Nash takes a big bump. Some people joke around, one of the biggest bumps he's ever taken. Obviously, mm-hmm. You know, obviously acts like, you know, huge, got shot, you know, big
yeah.
bump. Hogan covers him for the pinfall. He's the new WCW champion. Just kind of take me through that, of what you were going through watching that back. Were you just like thinking, like, why, you know, while you're in the back watching the money, you're just thinking, this is going to be horrible. Like you said, cringeworthy. This is not going to be good.
I was cringing the whole time. I knew the repercussions. You know what I mean? You can't put two stars like that in the ring and expect the people to buy that. And again, I've got to stick up for Kevin here. He was put in a position where he didn't have a say to say no. He might have been able to, but then he would have been on the outs with Hulk and probably a bunch of other people. And Kevin was smart enough that he was making all that money. He knew not to rock the boat and cause waves, because they had caused waves a couple of times, and they were threatened to go finish their contracts in Japan. And they said, sure, fine, we love Japan. So they took some heat that was not necessarily theirs. And if somebody has a bigger stroke than you, you better do what is asked of you. So, yeah, was it a huge mistake? Probably the biggest they made until later on. And I don't think they ever fully recovered from it.
Definitely not. And do you consider that like a business exposing moment? So many people like to say, oh, that exposed the business. Do you think that that did that?
Yeah, absolutely. Because the thing was, they had the illusion that this was really an invasion, that they really were the outsiders, and that they in their interviews, when Kevin would get mad and Scott would get mad, you could see that sometimes they were talking to their opponents rather than the people that may be hot at them, and it got them over, because the people said, this is real. And even back then, I don't think people thought all wrestling was real, but they bought Nash Hall and the Kid big time, big time.
There's no doubt about it. The realism, the believability of those guys, it's, something else doesn't look real. They look real. They were doing none of the cartoony stuff. So, yeah, that definitely, to me, was business exposing. And after that happens with the finger poke of doom, Hall, who's with Nash, Steiner, who's with Hogan, they get in the ring. They start celebrating,
right,
and basically kind of signifying that the NWO is back. It's NWO Wolfpack. This is going to be the group. This is going to be the, you know, the strong group. And Hogan spray paints the belt NWO in red, and you kind of have that NWO. Do you think that this was going to the well too many times? Like, yes, this worked before. Yes, this was the success, the formula, the pattern of success for sure. Do you think that's going to the well way too many times?
I think we all go to our comfort zone when we're not sure, and we go to what worked before. Well, people are much more hip today, and even back then, they don't want to be insulted, and we insulted the people. And I heard, in my head, I could hear the TVs being turned off or switched channels. So,
there's There's no doubt about it. And you say it, and it's actually 100% true, because they even say, or Shivani, which we find out later that he got instructions from Bischoff to say it, but they give away the raw results that night. And he basically says, oh, by the way, on our opposition on Raw tonight, Mick Foley beats The Rock, becomes the WWF world champion. Wow, Mick Foley is a world champion. That'll put some butts in the seats. And there are said to be anywhere between 600,000 and 800,000 viewers that changed the channel. So him saying that did not help. It actually hurt big time. So usually when Bischoff used to give the spoilers out, that actually worked for WCW, because it just made it look edgy and cool. But this time it worked in reverse. People wanted to see Foley win the title. They wanted to see that surprise. That was kind of an unexpected moment. Yes, it was on a tape show. Maybe some people knew ahead of time, but it was a shocking, cool moment, especially given what we just saw on WCW. They were just displeased. And they're like, wow, that sucked. But WWF, wow, Raw, this is great.
Exactly. And the other thing is, Mick Foley was at that time probably the most beloved guy with the wrestling fans. And to announce that, I even said in Mick Foley's book, he says the biggest compliment he got was Kevin Sullivan said, well, we just lost this night because they're tuning in to see Mick Foley win the belt against The Rock. And I did say that.
And it's true. I mean, the numbers prove it, and which is crazy. WCW would really never win again after that point. So people question Foley if he's a star, if he's a draw. Yeah, he's a star. Yeah, he's a draw. He's a huge star and a huge draw. And people were dying. Not only did they hate WCW at that point for what they did to Goldberg and the Nash Hogan figure broke doom, but they loved Foley. I mean, boy, he was one of the guys that are like, wow, this is awesome. What an underdog story.
Yes. He was an underdog. He looked like the fans. He was one of them. And, I mean, Mick worked his ass off to get where he was.
And it's funny that they say, like, yeah, you know, that'll put some butts in the seats. Cactus Jack is the world champion. You know, Mick Foley, the guy who used to be here, is Cactus Jack. They definitely didn't expect that. That was one of the big, big mistakes. I mean, you're talking about compounding mistakes and making mistakes. That was a huge mistake.
Yeah, it was trying to be too cute. And you can't be cute. You got to stay. And that's why a lot of people have knocked Vince about changing guys' characters, even though people knew them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he wanted to make them WWE. Or at the time, WWF people, not from the past. So I understand what he did, and he made a remarkable comeback, and he can thank Undertaker and Mick Foley and The Rock and Steve Austin for doing that.
And especially that night, Austin came out, helped, and Mick Foley beat The Rock for the WWF World title. It was a huge turning point in the Monday Night Wars. There's no doubt about that.
Exactly.
So if you go back to Nitro and you go back to WCW, Goldberg finally reenters the building and sees all this nonsense going on. He's going to go down. He's going to beat up the NWO. He's going to attack. Luger then comes out, and you think that Luger is going to help Goldberg. He turns on Goldberg as well. They put the handcuffs on him. They beat him up. They spray paint him. NWO is in full force now, and it's really the A-team, you know, Hall, Nash, Hogan, Steiner, Luger. I mean, it really is the A-team of the NWO. Did you guys think, like, that was definitely going to work, that you're going to basically redo the NWO with just the A-team, quote-unquote, members?
I think they thought it was going to work, but I said, it's just pissing on Superman's cape. I mean, we just screwed Goldberg. Shouldn't he have come down and chased everybody out of the ring, given everybody a tackle? I mean, you don't piss on Superman's cape. You don't spit in the wind, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't pull a mask off the old Lone Ranger, so, and you don't mess around with Jim. So, I mean, it was started to compound mistake after mistake after mistake. And this is something that everybody does. Once you get into a mode of that, you think you can hotshot it and bring it back. You can't. You have to go back to sensibility. And maybe you have to take an ass whipping for a couple of weeks, but if you or a month, or maybe even two. But you have to produce what got you to the dance. We're getting further and further away.
Just all seems like a lot of negative. Like you said, it was almost like one thing after another. The Foley thing was bad. Goldberg not having the rematch was bad. And this Elizabeth thing was bad. Obviously, the finger poke of Doom itself was bad. You think it was a big mistake giving Hogan the title again? Just not even just finger poke of Doom, but at this point, they had Austin, they had Foley, they had The Rock. I mean, they were kind of big time turning the corner, starting to catch up, starting to win a few weeks, you know, trade some battles. I mean, they were really starting to catch up and catch fire, and you gave away the results, and then Hogan's a champ again. And if you're a fan, you're almost like, oh, Hogan's a champ again? Is it almost like, man, you needed something fresh? Is Hogan the wrong guy for that era?
I'm not saying that he was, because he was still Hulk Hogan, but he was Hulk Hogan and he didn't need the belt. We needed, like we said earlier, if Goldberg and Nash had the series of matches and they ended up being tag team partners, then you have a whole new fresh coat of paint on the product. But we kept on sliding, and we wouldn't or couldn't turn it around because it might have been ego. It might have been, oh, this is an aberration. It can't last for long. But it certainly wasn't the best thing to do. And you might be right. I think that at that period, Hogan didn't need the belt. They had Mick Foley, they had The Rock, and they had Steve Austin and The Undertaker. We had watered down the NWO, and we weren't really paying attention. We just thought, well, it reminds me of baseball. I equate everything to baseball. Your head's 7-1, and you stop pulling your stars out. And it's the last of the ninth inning, you head 7-1, guy gets a scratch single, the next one hits a double, guy's got a second or third. Next one, there's a bloop fly in between two outfielders, the ball rolls to the wall, two guys score, the other guy stands on third, now you got a home run into the thing. Next thing you know, the game's over, you lost 8-7. That's what it looked like to me.
Great analogy. Yeah, that's a damn good point. Yeah, definitely. And given how strong you guys were kind of leading into, you know, obviously the 83 weeks and then 98, you guys would trade kind of back and forth with Austin versus Mr. McMahon and that whole storyline. Still, you guys were doing good up until that point. So at the end of the night, really, when the final ratings, the Nielsen ratings are tabulated, Raw 5.7, Nitro 5.0. So, I mean, huge, huge numbers. But they're on the winning end, and they would never lose again after that.
Right, right. Well, they grabbed the people and gave the people what they wanted and was smart enough to get one of the greatest heels of all times, Mr. McMahon, who was fresh, against Austin. And I watched it. I mean, come on, that was some of the best TV ever. So they just capitalized on what they had and made everything palatable to the fans, where we didn't.
So do you think that more than anything else that happened, I mean, we'll get into it in like kind of the upcoming week stuff, but more than anything else, do you think that this really was the beginning of the end for WCW?
Like I'm going to reiterate again, this is the Titanic hitting the iceberg and there's no making land.
So this is the beginning of the end.
Yep.
This is definitely the beginning of the end for WCW. Now, obviously the whole NWO thing where you try to, you know, like you said, it was watered down at this point, but you try to redo it. You try to, okay, it worked for us before. Can we make it work for us again? How soon do you realize that it's going to be a failed experiment and you try to backtrack?
I knew it right away. Once there's a hole, you can't fix it. You got to go with something different. At that period, I had suggested let's take a couple of the young guys and give them wins that they don't, people don't think they'll have, and let's make some fresh faces so the people tune into something fresh, and let the NWO go away for a while and come back in the original form. You just can't keep making mistakes, and we made a lot, and I'm as to blame as anybody else because I went along with it, you know. So, and McMahon and Austin and Rock and Mick and The Undertaker buckled down and did everything right and worked together and for the betterment of the company.
With WWF kind of taking off at that point, WCW, like you said, obviously, you know, it's the beginning of the end, What was kind of the thought process of you as the booker at that point? You, like you said, you're trying to create stars, trying to create fresh faces, but you can't almost, right? Because it's because of creative control?
Yeah, creative control. You got nothing. You can't buck it.
So he basically says he wants to go back and feud with Flair again? Because that's kind of what happens almost soon thereafter.
Yeah. Because they did big numbers before, but you can't buck it. We should have went on to something completely different, and we didn't. We had a bunch of young stars that we could have made, and we didn't. We didn't get the rub, like I said, when we first started this. Those guys from their generation didn't get the rub from the guys from my generation. So that's why, I mean, you know, we had Undertaker, we had Mick Foley, we had Steve Austin. And we let them go. So it was WCW guys beating us at our own game.
Yeah, pretty much, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Old WCW. You guys kind of had a lot of the old WWF guys. Not all of them, but some of them.
Yeah,
obviously,
yeah.
Hogan, Hall, Nash. With that night, if you think about it, if you go back and you listen, and Goldberg's getting beat up by the NWO, they are chanting for Sting. We want Sting. The old faithful, really kind of the most over guy ever in the history of WCW. The franchise of WCW. Sting was hurt at that point.
Right.
But if you guys listen to that crowd, it's like, oh, man, now Goldberg's getting beat up and they're already chanting for Sting. Like, that's possibly not a good sign either.
Right, right. There's a lot of bad signs, and they're all cooks. Once you make mistakes like we did, it starts a compound. And then people turn on you, the fans, and you can't get them back unless you go a different way completely.
And they do try to, or you try to, get Goldberg that win over Nash in the upcoming months. He does end up beating him. You bring in Bam Bam Bigelow, he beats Bigelow. So he does have some good feuds and some good things, but I feel like the aura, the mystique was gone.
The momentum was lost. The momentum
was
lost, yeah.
Yep.
The believability was gone. The handcuffing became wrestling. He was real. The spray painting on his back. You don't do that to Superman.
Yeah, he did end up looking not so Goldberg-like. Yeah, you're right. He was like this unbeatable monster.
He looked human. It was like the Joker putting the big bowl of kryptonite besides Superman, and Superman with his up. It was the worst thing we ever did.
Yeah, it was not a good day that day for WCW. Then obviously, you know, he compounded with WWF taking the lead and winning from there. And you almost inadvertently made Foley an even bigger star than he was by telling all those people to watch Foley on Raw.
Right, right. I can't disagree with you there.
It's not very good. I mean, and you want to think of some positives and stuff. There really weren't too many positives because Goldberg, like you said, he lost his momentum. Nash really kind of lost his momentum because he just laid down for Hogan, who didn't really have any momentum. He was out for a little bit. He came back. So it was just it was one of those things where it's like, wow, WWF is kind of moving forward and doing all this different stuff with the Attitude Era and this and that. And WCW is going all the way back to something that they did three years ago. They're reverting back to 3 years earlier and thinking the formula is going to work for a second or even third time.
Right. So
looking,
go ahead.
I was going to say, just looking back, and you know, that kind of like sums it up. But looking back, though, and we said kind of what you would do differently. It definitely was the beginning of the end. What would you like, what would you do differently, not booking-wise, like backstage-wise? Would you really maybe try to sit down with Hulk and to tell him that we can't do this? Would you try to convince Bischoff? Like, what would you do differently looking back?
One thing I tried not to do is look back, but here's the thing. If you got to poke a player with all the cards and he's dealt you two twos, you know he's got a couple of aces and this. Nothing you can do. I mean, I squawked a little, but I was crying in the wilderness, my man.
How is it? Like, just an empty feeling? You not able to do anything?
Yeah. You know what's happening, and I believe some of them knew what was happening, but there wasn't anything anybody could do.
And if you really think about it, I mean, Hogan and Nash would have matches later on. Even Road Wild 99 was a big one. Is that kind of a big marquee match that you missed out on that you just kind of threw out
there? Absolutely. It was a huge. And when we had it later on, who would have thought they were going to not do the finger poke of doom again? Once you stink something up.
Yep.
Once you stink something up, you know, something's rotten in Denmark, as Shakespeare says, you can't go back. And, you know, once those mistakes were made, there was no rectifying it. Unless they went a completely different way and you couldn't. You were stymied.
Man, it just kind of just stinks going back. Because WCW at its best, with you booking, you at the helm, definitely had some of the greatest moments in wrestling history, but this just was not one of them. Maybe that is for sure.
Yeah, that was for sure, my friend.
Now, as we kind of roll to the end here, just thinking back, obviously that was a huge disappointment in WCW. But as we come to the other weeks of the show, where as we kind of move on, what you fans can look forward to, we will definitely be talking about some highlights, some great booking decisions by the Taskmaster, even some crazy backstage fights and some other happenings that you've never heard anywhere else. You haven't heard the truth anywhere else. And you know, Mr. Kevin Sullivan was there for it all, either booked it all, was there creatively, or was there just in person as a wrestler. So, I mean, there's just so many things that we will get into in the upcoming weeks that I'm really looking forward to that you will shed some light on as the Taskmaster talks even further about all this stuff. And I just love to get kind of your insight in this because not a lot of people know these stories.
Right. And we're willing to tell the truth, my man. We'll get the truth. Thank you for the night. And thank our fans for listening, and please keep tuning in.
Yes, and you can follow me at Two Man Power Trip. The website is tmptempire.com. And please stick with us as we look forward to you joining us each and every week here on the Taskmaster Talks.